This talk was given by Jeffrey Shugan Arnold Roshi at Zen Mountain Monastery. Shugan Roshi is the abbot of the monastery and the Zen Center of New York City. This talk, like all of our talks, is offered free of charge. If you would like to make a donation or to find out more about our retreats and residency programs, visit us online at zmm.org. Thanks for listening.
From the Blue Cliff Record, case 87, medicine and disease heal each other. The pointer. A clear-eyed person has no nest. Sometimes on the summit of the solitary peak, weeds grow in profusion. Sometimes they're naked and free in the bustling marketplace. Suddenly they appear as an angry titan with three heads and six arms. Suddenly as a sun-face or moon-face Buddha, they release the light of all-embracing mercy. In a single atom, they manifest all physical forms. To save people according to their type, they mix with mud and water. If suddenly they release an opening upwards, not even the Buddha's eye could see them. Even if 1,000 sages appeared, they too would have to fall back 3,000 miles. Is there anyone with the same attainment and same realization? To test, I cite this old case. Master Yunmen, teaching the assembly, said, "Medicine and disease heal each other. The whole earth is medicine. What is yourself?" The verse. The whole earth is medicine. Why have ancients and moderns been so mistaken? I don't make the carriage behind closed doors. The road through is naturally quiet and empty. Wrong, wrong. Though they be high as the sky, your nostrils have still been pierced. So this weekend we did a retreat on the Bodhisattva path, the path of great compassion. And I've always liked this koan, and so I thought it would be good to bring it in. Medicine and disease heal each other. You know, Buddhism, the teachings are constantly talking about dualities. And it's really important that we examine these words, these teachings, so they don't become abstractions. You know, they sound somehow kind of sterile and philosophical. Medicine and disease, right and wrong, self and other, enlightenment and delusion, heal each other. And in the pointer, he presents us with this view, this being who has no nest, doesn't reside anywhere, can't be fixed in any place. And so, sometimes they're on the top of the solitary peak where everything is clear and pure. And in that very place, weeds grow in profusion, samsara. Sometimes they're naked and free, right? Unadorned, uncontrived, and in the middle of the busy marketplace. Sometimes they appear as a fierce being with three heads and six arms. And suddenly, at another time, they release the light of all-embracing mercy. So this is these are images of Kenon Bodhisattva, the great compassionate one, who in a single atom manifests all physical forms, appears in accord with the need, appropriate to the moment, and able to change shapes. And so we can think of that, you know, sort of fantastically as a shape-shifting, magical being. He's talking about us. It's poetry. But he's talking about something that's real. Now, non-attachment is not just an idea. It's not just a practice. It's not even a way of living the teachings. It's the way. It's the way. You know, if we want to be at peace in the world, how's the world itself at peace? Right? It's like if we want to enter into a game, we got to know, we got to enter into that field where the game's being played. You know, delusion is sort of like saying, yeah, I want to play the game, but I want to play it my way, over here. How does the world actually work? What is the world? Non-attachment is a way of describing how the world works. The world meaning everything, anything, all of it. And non-attachment is not apart from attachment. We speak of them as two because it's skillful to speak of them as two. One, so that we can recognize attachment. We have to begin recognizing what is attachment. What does it mean to grasp? What is clinging? We have to lift those words off the page and see them come to life in our mind, in our thoughts, in our emotions, in our actions, in our world. There's nothing abstract about them. And then we can begin to examine non-attachment. Attachment doesn't mean anything, or non-attachment doesn't mean anything. We can't even think about it until there is attachment. They're not separate from each other. Medicine and illness are not two separate realities. Right? When do we become particularly aware of our health? When we're sick. Right? When we're not sick, our sense of health kind of drops away. We just are. And if we think about this carefully, really reflect on these, all of these different opposites, and see how radically different our world not would be, but actually is, from the view of the world itself, which is just another way of talking about enlightenment. Enlightenment is just the world itself, and the world being you and me. And so we tend to think of attachment, particularly within practice, as the enemy. You know, well, what do we do with enemies? Get rid of them. And non-attachment is our salvation. Right? So already we have established the battleground. And what Yunmen is saying is they heal each other. They don't exist apart. We think of suffering as another world away from happiness. Happiness is a place where suffering doesn't exist. Enlightenment is the vanquishing of delusion. And thinking that either consciously or unconsciously, we sit down on our seats and we set about trying to make that all happen. And so we come to study the body, to study the breath, to study sensations, feelings, emotions, ideas, images, trees, shapes, sounds, Buddhas, demons, to see what they are. We already know what they are. Okay, so you know what they are. Now throw that away for a moment. Now, see what they are. Now, what else are they? What are they not? And what are they beyond all of this? A clear-eyed person has no nest. Think of a nest as a home, a place to rest, a place of comfort. Having no nest is actually a place of true comfort. You know, letting go of attachments can seem like we're sort of buying into some barren, ascetic, austere, grim, pleasureless world. Right? But letting go of suffering is actually finding true comfort. real happiness. When the monastics shave our heads each time we chant in the drifting, wandering world, it's very difficult to cut off our human ties. We could think of that as it's very difficult to be free within our involvements. Now, so that I can be free within my involvements, I cast them away and enter true activity. This is the way I show my gratitude. And so in order to understand what we have, we have to cast away our attachment to that very thing. Which in a certain sense means we have to cast away that thing itself, because the attachment is attachment to some idea of that thing, so that we can enter into true activity, so that we can actually be with that thing. And so within all of this poetry that he's bringing out in this poem, in this pointer, you know, it's about now. It's about here. This struggle, this situation, this beautiful early spring day, this world of possibilities, this world of madness. We shouldn't forget that. So Yunmen says, so that we won't forget, all the world is medicine. The whole earth is medicine, and medicine and disease subdue each other. Now, what is the self? What is yourself? Right? And this is such an incredible way of presenting, in a sense, the whole of Buddha Dharma. He could have also said the whole world is illness. Medicine and disease subdue each other. The whole world is medicine. Okay, so we go out looking for that medicine. If the whole world is medicine, let me add it. Let me have some. Because I got some problems. I got some illnesses I'd like to tend to. And so right as I'm getting ready to run out the door on my errand, Yunmen says, hang on, what is yourself? And I'm like, but it's out there. You just said the whole world is medicine. And Yunmen says, no, you're not listening. You're hearing, but you're not listening. What is yourself? So that you can go out that door and not be confused. There's a story in the commentary, he invokes a story about Manjushri, who once asked Sudana to go out and pick a bunch of medicinal herbs. And he says, if you find something that's not medicine, bring that to me. So Sudana goes out on his mission, his errand, and collects a bunch of herbs and comes back and says, I couldn't find anything that's not medicine. And Manjushri says, okay, so then bring me something that is medicine. And Sudana bends down, picks up a blade of grass and hands it to him. And Manjushri says, this medicine can kill, can free you. Take away everything. Free you of all of your involvements. And it can also bring you to life. Vimalakirti, when the Buddha first began teaching and taught the Four Noble Truths, you know, so think about it. Here's this person who, after this unimaginable journey, really, right, that brought him to the brink of death, that sent him wandering around the countryside, that had him leave, in which he left everything, every form of comfort and security and worldly, you know, path to happiness, came to this great enlightenment. And then he begins teaching, right? So you can just imagine. I mean, what would you want to, I'd like, let's tell me about that enlightenment, right? Give me some of that. How is it from up there? And the Buddha says, life is dukkha. And he said, this first we have to understand. First we must understand this. If we're going to go on a journey, we have to understand the ground we're walking on. And then he said, the reason is because of all of this thirst, all of this hunger, this insatiable, unquenchable thirst. This we must abandon, cast away these involvements. And then realize enlightenment, nirvana, cessation, peace. And then the path. And we might think, well, wait a minute, why didn't you start with the path? Right? Because that's like what we're actually doing. But really, first we have to recognize, where am I? Right? Why would I be interested in a path until I recognize where I am? And then realize that, oh, and this is because of something. And then be shown, and this is not, doesn't have to be. So having had that laid out, it's like, okay. Now what? And so the path. We must know it can be accomplished. Vimalakirti in the Vimalakirti Sutra says, what is the healing of this illness? And illness is used to describe delusion or suffering or dis-ease. In the way that when we're sick, there's a sense that somehow we have departed from health, good health. Right? When we're hurt, we're trying to restore our full capacity. And so delusion is referred to as an illness. So Vimalakirti says, what is the healing of this illness, this sickness? And he says it's the healing of self-centeredness and possessiveness. So we have to heal our self-centeredness. Our self-centeredness, seeing ourselves as separate and distinct, putting ourselves as the center of the universe, putting our own needs and desires above others, is this illness and one of its many symptoms. And possessiveness, because in that state, then I will naturally want to possess. Right? Since I am the center of the universe, I deserve to have what I want. And then what is the healing of this self-centeredness and possessiveness? He says is to be free of dualism, free of two. And it was free of the constant setting things against each other. Setting our sickness against the medicine, our delusion against our enlightenment, our attachments against our non-attachments, our goodness against our badness. Setting them not just apart, but against each other. What is the freedom? What is the healing from dualism, from this setting against? And Vimalakirti said, it's the absence of involvement, freeing ourselves of our involvement with either the inside or the outside. To not reject, to not hold. In other words, to let down the wall. I mean, you know, building the wall is such a perfect metaphor, a perfect reality of the view from delusion. It's perfect. It is exactly that thing. that we do in our minds. No hindrance in the mind means no walls in the mind, and therefore no fear. When there's fear, the wall makes sense. Build it big, build it long, build it beautiful. To heal ourselves from the involvement in that boundary making. What's the healing of our involvements? He says it's to not deviate, to not fluctuate, and to not be distracted from equanimity. To be on a path of not deviating from. Know what the path is. Know what's important. Know what direction we're headed in. To not fluctuate is to develop constancy, steadiness. Steadiness, just steady. Right? Even a little trickle of water will wear down a great stone over time. And to be not distracted. Keep your eye on the ball. And in a world of distraction manufacturing, that's not a small thing. We talked about that yesterday, that the heart of that is bodhicitta. The heart of being non-deviating, non-fluctuating, and non-distracted is bodhicitta. Because the question is not deviating from what? Not fluctuating from what? Not being distracted from what? Bodhicitta, the great aspiration, having determined within oneself, yourself, myself, what the path is. You know, when I was young and I was just starting to think, okay, there's something about this that isn't working. And I started looking. I was looking. I talked to my girlfriend because she had a car. Let's go check out churches. What are they up to? Right? There's a whole bunch of people that think that's a way. Right? And that was after a period where I thought all church was bullshit. You know, in my 15-year-old absolute certainty. So after a while, I thought, well, you know, there's a whole lot of them and there's just me, so maybe they know something. And so I said, let's go to church. Bless her heart. She said, okay. So we'd go to different churches, you know, and there wasn't a lot of variety in Atlanta, Georgia at that time. And I wasn't looking for a place to join so much. I was just looking to see, I was looking for something that I felt was alive. Not that I want a piece of this thing, but does something exist? Is there something that is alive? And so looking doesn't mean we have to know what we're looking for. Sometimes what we know is what we're driven by is what we're confident it is not. And that can be very powerful because it starts narrowing things down. Not fluctuating. And that's bodhicitta. Is having, in a sense, narrowed things down. And what we find, you know, I was talking yesterday about how it's like, you know, like resonance, so that when we encounter the Dharma, we encounter a teaching, we encounter a practice, and there's feeling of affinity, it's like there's a resonance between, you know, a string that's vibrating within ourselves and the tune or the frequency of that. And I said, but when that bandwidth is very narrow, you know, then most things fall outside of it. Bodhicitta, when we really raise bodhicitta, that bandwidth is limitless. Everything begins to fall into resonance. In other words, we begin to see the way everywhere, which really means we see suffering everywhere. We see inspiration everywhere. We see the self everywhere. And Vimalakirti says, well, what is equanimity? And he says, it's the equality of everything from self to liberation. medicine and sickness heal each other. How do they heal each other? He says, therefore, one who sees this equality makes no distinction between sickness and medicine, between sickness and emptiness, between emptiness and form. They realize their illness is empty. That their illness as emptiness is empty itself. And now they're free, having cast away the illusion of being trapped by involvements. Now our involvements are freed, liberated. Milarepa said, as long as our minds are clouded by delusion, we're bound to external phenomena by clinging, grasping, and fixation. When we realize that appearances are empty of any inherent essence, then the phenomenal world becomes our friend. And this friend can appear in many different ways. Sometimes they're a nice friend. Sometimes they're a mean friend. Sometimes they're happy. Sometimes they're angry. They appear as earth, wind, fire, and water. They appear as enlightened beings and deluded beings, past beings and future beings. Just because they're friends doesn't mean they all smell good. Medicine and sickness heal each other. It's like racism. To set racism against not being racist, against being a good person, is kind of the kiss of death in actually trying to study and free ourselves of the racism that has been inculcated within us. Because they're opposed to each other. And so if I experience, if I'm shown racist views within myself or sexist views within myself, then I'm at war with them because I don't want to be that person. I want to be a good person. So I've got a big problem. The easiest thing to do is just don't look. Don't be shown. Don't put myself in a position where that can be shown to me. Because then that sense of I am this person, I hold with great fragility intact. And what we see when we actually engage is they heal each other. You know, it can be very difficult to turn towards what is true when what is true should not be. No one should have to turn towards this. So when someone within the delusion of their mind determines to kill 50 people in a quiet New Zealand town, no one should have to face that truth. That truth should not exist. And here it is. And to face that can seem like the worst asking. And yet only in facing it can there be any liberation. Sickness and medicine heal each other. And we can't know that in advance. But when we encounter it skillfully, so what does that mean to turn towards? What does that mean to face? What does it mean to meet? These are just words. Practice doesn't show us how to do that. It shows us that we already know. It's our very nature. It's our being. And then we realize within the enormity of that grief that we are liberated. To be in that grief. To be in this actual world where things that should not happen do happen. But we are now liberated to move, to live, to attend, to respond, to heal. And the commentary says, right now, this whole great earth is a profuse array of myriad forms, up to and including your own self. At once it's medicine. At such a time, what do you call yourself? Where do you find yourself? If you only call it medicine, then even by the time Maitreya Buddha is born, you still won't have seen Yunmen even in his dreams. Ultimately, how is it? If you just call it medicine, if you say it's only medicine, this is why Dogen says, in response to the Bodhisattva precepts, after having presented them in full, now, don't comment on them. Just practice them. Don't sit around and talk about it. Just practice them. That's one of the, you know, it's so important and good to gather and to spend the day talking about the Bodhisattva and practice and compassion. There's a danger in that too. You know, we spend a day, we discuss it, we engage in conversation, and we can walk away feeling like, okay, that's done. What does it all mean? It's not in the meaning. It's in the undivided this. The world is medicine. The world is illness. Where do you find yourself? Something is not a thing. A body, a person, a tree, a house, a feeling. No matter what you point to, it's made of an infinity of parts. And each of those parts, and every quality in each of those parts, and every idea you have about each of those parts, and the ways those parts act, and the consequences of those actions, all of them are made up of an infinity of things. Irreducible to not a thing. Or reducible to not a thing. Where is the body within the body? Where is anger within the emotion, the sensation? The undivided this that we call anger. Where is the medicine within that which we call medicine? You know, with this koan, we all know the experience of how something difficult can bring about positive change, positive experiences, learning, growth. It's one of the very important ways in which we do learn and grow. Is within challenges. How one event, even something horrible, can have good results, can lead to good results. Good things happen. Right? So a couple of days ago, our Sangha in Christchurch joined with other faith groups, and they stood in a circle holding hands around the mosques in which people were killed while they were praying, while the members of each mosque were praying, as a way of expressing love and solidarity and a kind of protection. Prime Minister, I told the Kiwis when I was there last January, I said, you don't know this, but we're working on bringing her here. Having a little quiet coup. She's not agreed yet, that's the problem. She doesn't really want to leave home. So within 72 hours, there's a ban on these ludicrous, ridiculous weapons. Ridiculous that we have these weapons. And so good things happen. But if something is just absolutely bad, how can it be something else? The only way is that we have to cast off being, isness, that sense of something is one thing. Dogen says in the Mountains and Rivers Sutra, at the time of birth, are both parent and child transformed? We must study and fully understand not only that birth is actualized in the child becoming the parent, but also that the practice and verification of the phenomenon of birth occurs when the parent becomes the child. They become each other. And that's amazing teaching. And it's also the limitation of language, because it is not becoming. Medicine doesn't become illness. Illness doesn't become medicine. We don't become enlightened. Pain doesn't become joy. Healing each other is they are each other. Dogen says, as Dharma is all-inclusive, unwholesome action is all-inclusive. As Dharma is all-inclusive, wholesome action is all-inclusive. All actions are like this. All things are like this, all-inclusive, encompassing everything, not bound by definitions. An action is just action. Doing is just doing. And yet, as Dogen says in this fascicle, and yet this all-inclusive appears in many different forms. It can kill. It can give life. And so one person, every person, is all-inclusive of humanity, of virtues and faults, of the elements of past and future. Each of us, a universe. Each of us, the universe. But how do we live that? Here it is. This is what it looks like. It's not something that we create. But how do we awaken to that? What does that mean as we are on the path of awakening? Because the path of awakening means to live as that enlightened being. To bring forth compassion is to be that compassionate being. That's what practice is. It's not like investment. You know, you put your money in the bank, it accrues interest, and one day you take it out and you've got this treasure. It's now. So as we are still seeing things as two, as we are still in within the forces of karma and the world, how do we realize, actualize sickness and medicine, heal each other? Well, that's what Vimalakirti is talking about. When we see our mind creating the world of opposites, and seeing how that leads to that battleground. Cease. So that when we're in a situation where it seems to be unequivocally this or that, like coming here this morning, right? Being here this morning, you're not at home. Right? Isn't there a clear and absolute boundary between those two worlds? You had to make a choice to leave one place and come to another. Well, there's no denial that you came from somewhere and you're here now. But the question is, as Yunmen says, where do you find yourself? Where is the wall? Where is here and there? And so we practice extending in the four directions, which is just another way of saying dissolving that boundary. In the Visuddhimagga by Buddhaghosa, Buddhaghosa is talking about the four immeasurables, how to practice them. And he's really just echoing the Buddha. And he says, the bodhisattva, you, dwells pervading intent upon one direction with your heart endowed with loving kindness. And so on in the second, third, and fourth direction. And so above and below and around, pervading intent with your heart endowed with loving kindness. Everywhere and equally, you dwell pervading the entire world with your heart endowed with loving kindness, abundant, exalted, measureless, free from enmity and affliction. No battleground, no boundaries, all directions, abundant, exalted, joyful, loving kindness. This is a practice, right, of embodying loving kindness in your mind, in your body and mind, in all directions, equally, everywhere. And he says, goes on to say, everywhere means every place, just in case you might close some place off. Equally means to all classed as inferior, as medium, as superior, as friendly, as hostile, as neutral, etc., etc., etc. Fill in according to your own preferences. Those classes that we would not include equally. Or alternatively, equally is with the whole state of mind, not reserving even a little is what is meant here. Entire means possessing every being associated with everything. This is what that means. World is the world of beings. And so as we spoke about yesterday, we practice this in your mind because you can do that. I can do that with loving kindness, with compassion, with gladness, with equanimity. And I can realize that in my mind, that world, that limitless, abundant, measureless, free from enmity and affliction, that capacity that exists in me, and I can practice that. And that's real. And that is mind training for inhabiting a world, experiencing a world that is just so. Right? And along the way, we will encounter many boundaries. We will have to deal with the battlegrounds that we have established. Right, we will have to go out and retrieve and call back in those that have been excluded. Right, so that when we get off that cushion, we have begun training in how to do that within and without. So in the poem, he says, the whole earth is medicine. Why have ancients and moderns been so mistaken? There's a story he tells of an old master, Tame, who was about to die, and his students were gathered around. And as his last teaching, he said, in coming, there's nothing to look to. In going, there's nothing to pursue. And then right then, there was the cry of a squirrel. And Tame said, it's just this thing. It's not anything else. Keep it well. I'm going to go. And later, Zuedo, who compiled this collection of koans, said, this fellow was sloppy in life and fat-headed in death. (Laughter) affectionately spoken. He said, just this thing, not anything else. What thing is this? What are you talking about? Why are you so mistaken? In case we would hear that story and think, let me go and hear the cry of the squirrel. It's there. I don't make the carriage behind closed doors. Everything can seem so opaque, so distant, so hidden. And what he's saying is, no, the carriage is not made behind closed doors. This path is not concealed. Everything is on display. And that road itself is naturally quiet and empty, originally so. But then Zuedo says, wrong, wrong. Hakuin says to that, oh dear, said too much. Sloppy in life, fat-headed. And these, they're saying, be careful. Be careful about where and how quickly and how proficiently we make our nests. It's not this, it's that. Though they be high as the sky, your nostrils have still been pierced. No matter how high we rise, the moment we grasp, we hang on, our nostrils are pierced, which is a way of, you know, like the ox, the cow that puts the ring in the nose. I remember when I was working on a dairy farm, I was working with the son of the farmer. He was a big guy, 16, 17, high school. And we had to deal with this young heifer and get her into a stall. She didn't want to go. And so he went up and he put his hand around her neck and put his fingers in her nostrils because there was no ring. So his hands were the ring, and he was pinching her because it hurts, right? And then he could sort of subdue her and kind of get her into the pen. Well, she was not having it. She just flicked her head, and he flung around so that now he was right in front of her like this, and she ran and pounded him right into the wall, and he just sunk. And I thought, oh, my goodness. I haven't learned enough to do that job. So even if there's a nose ring, the moral of the story is, you still have power. The three fearlessnesses we spoke about yesterday of the Bodhisattva is to be fearless, to have courage of how much suffering there is in the world, of how long this path is, and of how difficult the journey. And what can seem so counterintuitive, it can seem like, okay, the right thing to do is just move quickly in the opposite direction. Right? Just forget about all of this. But that is the path that brought us here. That is the illness we're trying to cure. That happiness we know is not true happiness. And so, bring forth your courage. It's just this world. And when we let go of the nest of expectation, of, I am going to fix this, I am in control, and we see ourselves as earth and wind, fire and water, they just move in accord with their environment. They appear and disappear. They have prominence, even a mighty storm comes up and changes the landscape, and then it's gone. and becomes forgotten. It doesn't leave itself. And look at how powerful those forces are. Even a gentle breeze, even a little trickle, even a little patch of dirt in the side, in a crack in a sidewalk, is enough for spring flowers to bloom.
Thanks so much for listening. For meditation supplies such as cushions, incense, liturgical instruments, Dharma books, and more, visit monasterystore.org. Support for your spiritual practice at home.